Welcome to the Fitfluential Radio Podcast, the intersection of health, wellness, and fitness. Join hosts Kevin Cottrell and Kelly Alexa as they interview thought leaders and world-class experts in order to demystify and declutter complex health and wellness topics. The goal in each episode is to provide you with actionable tips and information in order to apply them in your everyday lifestyle.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Fitfluential Radio. I am your host, Kelly Alexa, and today I have the honor of having Tina Muir on the show. Tina is an exceptional woman with an outstanding British accent. Just going to put that out there. That alone was enough to make me excited to chat with her. She is an experienced runner who, you know, runs marathons like the rest of us put on socks. But I think what you're going to enjoy most about this show, and this is in particular for the ladies out there listening, but also for men, we talk a lot about body image and something that comes up quite a lot and isn't maybe discussed enough in the fitness, health, and wellness space, which is body image, how to have a better body image, a better relationship with yourself so that you are making fitness fun versus a punishment and something that you're doing to punish yourself and always relentlessly pursue perfection. And none of us should be searching for perfection. We should embrace our perfect imperfections. So tune in, excited for you to hear from Tina and listen to her exciting background, how she got into running and what she loves the most and how she varies her training. We'd love to hear what you think about the show. Let us know on fitfluentialradio.com or certainly in the comments on iTunes. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Fitfluential Radio. I am your host, Kelly Alexa, and today we are going to be talking about running, all things running, and we've got some good stuff here. A wonderful expert on the show who has both an outstanding blog, which I love, and also a fantastic podcast that I think you guys are going to want to check out. Welcome to the show, Tina Muir, and I hope I said your last name correctly, Tina.
You did, and thank you so much, Kelly. I'm excited to be here.
And also for those of you that are nerdy Americans like me, I think, Tina, people will tune into your show all the more just because you have this beautiful accent. And just, I didn't even plan on asking you this, but you're originally from England, is that correct? But you've been in the States about 7 years, is that right?
Yeah, actually, it's been longer than that now. I don't know what I haven't updated and what I have, but yeah, it's been almost 10 now, which is just insane to think about that it's been that long. But yeah, I've managed to hold on to my accent as best I could.
please keep doing that for your sake. I wish I could have an English accent, but everything sounds better with an accent. I just have that kind of like Chicago accent. I'm down in Austin, Texas right now, but people still say, I can tell you're from Chicago, but working on that. So anyway, let's dive right in. I told everybody about you in the intro and about your fantastic blog and your podcast, but I do like to ask most of our guests that come on the show, you know, how things got started for you. You know, when did you not only get interested in running, but when did you, and maybe you didn't start with running, but when did you first in your life become interested in activity, fitness, living a healthy lifestyle?
I mean, I think I was always one of those like competitive kids. I can even think back to, you know, memories of like 2-3 years old where I would be, you know, racing boys down the hill on my bike. So I think I've always been competitive. So it's always been in there. But, you know, I did enjoy various types of sports in school. But it was pretty soon I realized that I wasn't actually good at those sports. I just could, you know, stay around the ball or stay around whatever it was for longer because I could just run around. So I don't know if I was actually skilled or if I just could, you know, outlast most people. But yeah, so age 14, I would say, was where I really started to rise through the ranks of my class in cross country, although I didn't actually enjoy it at first. I've told this many times, but I actually hid in the bathrooms for cross country tryouts because I didn't want to run. I had no interest in it.
So, no way.
Yeah. So it's funny thinking about it now that I, you know, I could have got started even earlier, but I just had no interest in it. So, and it was, yeah, it kind of came along with that, that I started to pay attention to, you know, health and wellness. And I did take a bit of a dip, I will admit. Around 18, 19, I did go the party lifestyle, and I wouldn't say health was a priority there, but it kind of almost made it, when I did rein it back in, it kind of made it me appreciate my health so much more and realize how much better I felt when I actually started paying attention.
That's amazing. And it's funny that you bring that up, because my personal background, I wish that I had more of an athletic bone in my body when I was younger. My mom encouraged me to try out for a volleyball team, and I think I made it. I was given a pity approval in ninth grade because I have zero athletic ability. So I played, and I'm using air quotes, volleyball for like, I don't know, a quarter. And then I wasn't renewed for the team, but I did not get into even remotely being interested in fitness or wellness or anything outside of just my newfound freedom at 18. You know, from like 18 to 23, it was just like you. It was, oh my gosh, I don't live with my parents anymore. I can stay out as late as I want. I can eat cheeseburgers at 3 a.m. And it's so crazy. I'm a little surprised I didn't end up gaining, you know, 200 pounds with the way the partying goes. But we digress. So anyway, and one little side note, you know, you started being interested when you were young at age 14. And I don't know if you observed this back then, but I'm curious, you know, when I was growing up, it was more that in high school and junior high, it seemed like guys tended to be more into athletics and track and running and soccer than the girls. Was that your experience over, you know, where you lived way over there? Or was it different than that? I'm just curious.
Yeah, well, running and cross country and all kinds of sports, actually, other than, obviously, as most people know, soccer and maybe cricket, are completely different over there. Like, they're really, I mean, when I say I was on a cross country team, I was the only one on the cross country team. And when I say that, it was literally where my PE teacher would drop me off at a race and just kind of be like, all right, go run around that field and then come back. Like, it wasn't structured at all. And yeah, so I would say it definitely had that same kind of, cross country wasn't really the cool sport. I could admit that myself. And, you know, a lot of the girls, we have a sport called netball in England, which is like basketball, but with a smaller hoop and without the backboard and no dribbling. But anyway, it's just for girls. And that was kind of like the cool sport. And so, yeah, I mean, there was a lot of things that were very similar. And you know, it is kind of different over there. It's not quite as like segregated with, you know, you don't have like the jocks and the nerds and all that. It's a bit more, everyone is together, but yeah, cross country and running definitely wasn't like the cool thing to do. I just, for me, it was, you know, I'd never really been someone who had really cared that much. I did have friends and I was happy with friends, but I wasn't that concerned. Although I will admit that when I was first taking it up, when I would train, quote unquote, I would make sure I ran in the dark when none of my friends could see me. And if someone saw me and said, "Oh, I saw you running," I'd be so embarrassed. So
really?
Yeah, it's funny now, like looking at it. And I wouldn't dare keep my running clothes on for any minute beyond the actual run itself. So it's funny.
That's so, and I mean, that can be the same for so many of us in so many contexts. You know, I look back on certain things and the way I viewed things and what used to embarrass me. I'm like, oh, you poor child. But that's, I think that's interesting, because I think about now, you know, how much has changed with just fitness, like in this country. You think about 30 years ago, did you see people walking around living in workout wear? No. And now it's like, you know, everybody's stopped buying khakis and jeans because everybody's wearing their workout clothes all the time. It's like a badge of honor. So interesting how times have changed, and sometimes how it's so fast, but sometimes it's slower than we think. So I want to move on next. You know, you obviously told us about how you got interested in this and how it was an interest and then a pause when you were 18 and then you picked it up again. When did you start? You know, we mentioned in your intro about your blog, and you have a fantastic blog. When did you start blogging about your fitness and running journey, and why?
Well, again, this has another funny turn to it in that I mean, most people that know me, and I know you wanted to like discuss this later, I have at this biggest sweet tooth. I'm one of those people that could eat a tub of frosting from a jar.
Me too.
So my blog actually started out called Insatiable Sweet Tooth, and I would literally write about things I had baked, which were like not just a blondie, but a blondie with like M&Ms and Twix and Snickers in it with like frosting on top. And so I would.
Dear God.
Yeah. And I was putting that on there, but then my running was starting to get good. And people were kind of saying like, wow, do you eat this stuff? And I did, but I kind of realized that it wasn't really fair to people to say, hey, I eat this and I'm good. So I kind of started transitioning into healthier recipes, and then I noticed people were asking me for advice, and it just kind of developed from there to where over time it slowly transitioned into more of a health and wellness and looking after yourself. And over the years, I've just put more of a focus on, you know, long-term health rather than just, you know, what you feel is important in the moment, but you kind of know deep down isn't maybe what's best for you long-term.
Wow. And, okay. That's fantastic. Yeah. Sorry, I'm jumping in, but that's like a great talking point that I'll bring up later, but please continue since I interrupted too early.
Oh, no, you're fine. But yeah, so it just, and then I noticed that I know you're very similar to this, Kelly. I don't mind like sharing my thoughts and being honest and kind of saying like, hey, I'm struggling. You know, so I noticed that when I did that, other people were like, thank you so much for saying that. You make me feel so much better about myself. And I thought, you know what? If I have to make a bit of a fool of myself and kind of say that, look, I'm not perfect and, you know, I had a bad day and I'm supposed to be a professional, then, you know, it helps other people. And if it helps other people, then, you know, it's worth it for me. So, yeah, just kept developing from there.
Amen to so much of what you said. And for those that are listening, you know, the reason that I'm asking why she started blogging is, you know, a lot of folks that are listening are just discovering Fitfluential through the Fitfluential Radio, the podcast. Maybe they haven't read blogs. Maybe they're not blogging. But the reason that I ask is, you know, I think blogging can be such, it can be therapy. It's a great way if you are just starting out on a fitness journey. I mean, frankly, I started blogging with my blog, and I had no idea in 2007. Like, I was not the baller blogger that that so many of like my Fitfluential ambassadors are. I didn't pay attention, and I was using photos I didn't have permission to. They're all taken down now, of course, because I didn't know. I was just writing journal style. It was strictly for accountability. I remember that I put my blog up, and I'm like, if I put this up there and three people read it, if I say I'm going to do this week. It just made me feel like I was accountable to those people.
Yeah.
So for me, here I was blogging, and it was really just because I'd read so many blogs. That's where I got my recipes. That's where I got my motivation. That's where I'm like, oh, I can work my delts this way. And I learned about chi running. I mean, I didn't know how to run until I figured out the breathing. We'll get into that later. But the reason that I ask you and others that are on the show, why did you start blogging? Blogging can lead to so many things. And I am not saying that because I founded a company that a lot of what we do is based on bloggers working with brands. This is not about a business thing. It's just like, hey, guys, from my experience, I started blogging. It ended up connecting me with so many amazing friends years down the road. It gave me business opportunities where I got, you know, paid and invited to some great events. It actually ended up becoming a way for me to found a business. And now it still is. It's a way for me, like you said, I love it when someone writes to me and they say, thank you so much for sharing your struggles. Because I used to, I'm going to say, probably self-mentally Photoshop myself. You know, I didn't want to tell anybody if I'd fallen off the wagon. I didn't want to say how much I weighed. I didn't want to say what size I was because I was always worried about what people thought.
Yep.
And in most recent years, as I've started to get, you know, whether it's Periscope, YouTube, whatever, my blog, I share about my hormonal journey and dealing with these hormonal imbalances and telling people, here's what I weigh and I can't lose weight in this one area. And here's what my hypothyroid situation is. More people write to me every day, just like you said, and they go, thank you so much, because I don't feel alone. And maybe for those listening, some of you might go, you're getting a little Oprah, Kelly, but I do. It just makes me feel so much better that you can help somebody else who feels clueless or alone or left out, that you're sharing that you've been there and that accountability factor. So I think it's cool to hear why people started blogging. Obviously, they're still doing it. And for those that are listening, you know, it's a really great way to make friends with like-minded individuals and to learn. So I didn't plan on talking about that long, but
I'm so glad you said that as well, because it's so true. And especially in this world of like Facebook and Instagram, where, you know, all people put up is their picture of their, you know, them sitting on the beach with their toes in the, with their pedicure toes in the sand, and you know, they drinking their cocktail, and oh, life is so good, but they're not, you know, showing the struggle. So I think the people that do have that ability to be able to share and say, you know, I did have a rough day, or like I, you know, just other things that other people are struggling with, like you said about your hormones. And, you know, I talk a lot about weight also, and just the way that we view ourselves when all you see on Facebook or on Instagram are these perfect images where, you know, people put the best versions of themselves. Well, it's okay to say, you know, I'm not perfect, and I know I'm not, and I struggle with this too. It just helps us feel not so alone and feel like those airbrushed magazines aren't reality, but what is reality is, you know, what we are actually feeling, even though only a few people will admit it.
Gosh, I'm so glad you brought that up too, because I know that that's something, you know, body image that you bring up a lot on your blog. It's certainly something I have personally struggled with. A lot of men and women in the Fitfluential community, and I know a lot of listeners here on the podcast are feeling the same way. I mean, it's more widespread than we realize, but just like you said, this is what is very difficult. In fact, I'm going to share something just last Friday, because this has to do with media messaging and like you said, Photoshop. And we actually went to see this movie with Tom Cruise in it, Jack Reacher. Mm-hmm. And I'm a fan of like beat 'em up action movies. I'll put it out there. I mean, anything that has like Jason Bourne in it, I'm all over it. And so we go to see this movie, and there's this one scene where he goes out and he buys clothes to disguise, you know, this woman who's his accomplice. And he throws the bag on the bed, and he says, here, you know, I got you some clothes to change into. And somebody actually wrote out this scene and felt that this was necessary. She pulls the jeans out of the bag. They do a close-up. She looks at the price tag, and it says size 4. And she goes, oh, you got the right size. And I looked at Kevin, because it was Kevin, my podcast co-host, that saw the movie with me. I'm like, do you know what that does to women that are watching that? They're automatically comparing themselves. I'm not a size 4. Oh, my jeans are size 8. I'm huge. I'm fat. And he's like, I didn't even notice that they said that. And I go, well, that's the difference between the messages that are in women's magazines versus men's, the double standard in many media messages, television, movies, social media versus, and the expectations of men versus women. But I'm like, why did that have any relevance to the rest of the script? Why did we need to know she's a size 4? Yeah. And he's like, I can't believe you even thought about that. But I'm like, do you understand how many times I've read that Jennifer Aniston is a size 0, or that Nicole Richie is a size 0? And, you know, back in the day. So this is a hot topic, and I mean hot in a bad way. Mm-hmm. And I want you to elaborate, but just like you said, social media can be so, it can be so good for fitness, health, and wellness, for really so many things, but it can be really bad because a lot of people, especially those just starting out, don't realize that so many images are distorted and photoshopped, and they think that somebody who's a fitness competitor on stage looks like that all the time. How do you deal with your own body image, and what are the things that you commonly hear when people write into you on your blog about this topic?
Yeah, I'm so glad you said that. And yeah, it drives me crazy, like especially when I go on Pinterest. That one just gets me more than anything with, you know, these motivational messages and what they, the captions they have on these pictures of these women, and I it just makes my blood boil. But Yeah, I mean, I really feel like I have a kind of unique situation in that, I'm a professional runner. I am, you know, I am kind of essentially it's part of my career to do what I do. And so people will look at me and, you know, I've had people say it to me many times, like, oh, if I look like you, or, you know, people will make remarks quite a lot. But, you know, I stand on the start line of a race, or I, finish a run, and I am still looking sideways at everyone else around me and thinking, oh, well, if I had, you know, a six pack like that, or like, oh, you know, my legs are bigger than this person, or whatever it is. I feel like most of us have one trouble spot that we, sure, when we look in the mirror, our eyes just go to. It doesn't matter like how confident you feel about the rest of you, but every time your eyes go to that area. So for me, that's my stomach. So I just stare at that little bit of my belly below my belly button, and that's where I look. And so I try to, like, with my blog, like, say, like, you guys may think I look, you know, perfect or whatever, but to me, I don't. And that is what the media has done to me. And I realize that, you know, for other women who, this is, you know, men and women, but especially for women who are bombarded with these messages, it feels like a never-ending battle. And that's not even including, you know, the mothers who are trying to come back from, giving birth, which is the most, you know, one of the most important things we will ever do. But they, you know, it's almost impossible to feel good about yourself. And like you said, you know, that these images everywhere are just so perfect. And I want to kind of say to anyone listening that, you know, you may look at the elite runners or the professional runners and think, wow, they look incredible. Like, if only I look like that. And, you know, I was just at the gym yesterday doing my strength training, and I do like heavy lifting. Some lady who was filming her daughter was just like, oh, if I look like that. And, you know, so I get remarks like that quite a lot. But what she doesn't realize is that I'm right now about 3 weeks out from my big marathon. And after that, I will take 2 weeks off. And for me, I usually gain about 10 pounds, which I believe is a good thing. Some people do struggle with that, but I believe it's a good thing. And what people don't realize is what they see in these magazines and what they see on the start line of a race is us at our absolute peak. Mm. So we don't look like that year round. And actually, most people, you know, will not show themselves anywhere online when they don't look their best. People are only going to put the best version of themselves up. So it's just very distorted. And I'm trying to go against that with my blog to show that it's okay to not be perfect. And when I got back from my honeymoon, I gained like 10 pounds, I think it was 9 pounds in like 3 weeks. Hmm. And, you know, I said to people on my blog, I said, I am struggling with this mentally right now because, you know, I'm seeing these pictures of other runners I'm racing against, and I look big next to them. And obviously I didn't in the grand scheme of things, but it was still mentally like toxic. And I just think it's such an important topic that's not discussed enough.
Well, we certainly, you know, I have a commitment that on this show, we want to talk about this. And I do, you know, as much as a lot of, like you said, you know, I love Pinterest for home decor and shoes and makeup and stuff. But, you know, when I go on there and I see these things, like, I always pick on Jennifer Aniston. I don't know why, but there's always like, get Jennifer Aniston's arms in 3 days. You know, it's like just something stupid. As much as that kind of content is proliferating and there are people that want to take advantage and get you thinking, buy this pill and do this detox for, you know, and buy my ebook for $39 and you can lose 25 pounds in 10 days. That kind of stuff will always be there. Mm-hmm. But what I am starting to see and I love is there are more folks that are willing to be, this is an overused word, authentic and transparent. And I know one of the gals that I think of, she's more in the, I'd say, bodybuilding, maybe CrossFit space. I don't want to label anybody like that, but again, like figure, she used to compete in figures, Ashley Horner. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I love about her is she's all about strong women. And she has had 2 or 3 children. But after her last baby, she started her training after baby, but she was posting pictures of herself, not trying to say, look, you know, I've got my abs back after baby. She shows her stretch marks and she's like, I am proud of these stretch marks that I earned because these are my children. That's the mm-hmm. best thing in my life. And I'm not going to Photoshop them out. And she has some extraordinarily motivating videos, but she did not try to say, I'm only going to show myself working out on Instagram after I'm back to my body after baby weight, right? She was showing herself when she was X pounds. And I give her credit for that. I thought that was a very good example. The other thing I like about, and I'm just using her as an example, she has some weight loss programs and she shows a lot of her clients, I guess, that have lost, you know, 5-10 pounds. They're nowhere near, you know, the perfect, you know, like you said, cover girl look. And she's praising them and going, you know, and she's got this awesome, very supportive community. I like that there's more men and women that are coming out like that on social, not praising somebody that's airbrushed and perfect. We're talking about real bodies and accepting ourselves for the way we were made. Mm-hmm. I mean, we should. So yeah, I'm behind you. I could go on, and this podcast is not about me today. It's about you. But I agree with you. We certainly want to explore this topic, and maybe you can come back on and we just talk about this and take use your questions. Because again, people, look at the body you've been given. Respect it, no matter where you are today. I'm learning with everybody. Respect other people's struggles, and let's just be kinder to one another and kinder to ourselves. That's something I'm working on. And sometimes that's the hardest thing, right? Would you agree that just looking at yourself and giving yourself a break and saying, you know what, Kelly, you are not made to be a size zero, and that doesn't make you any less of a human being than somebody who is. Stop the comparison trap. That sometimes is the hardest part, is convincing yourself.
Absolutely. 100%. I mean, this is something I agree we could go on, for hours, because it's so easy to compare yourself against other people, and we don't see that we have different shapes and sizes, and there's different versions of beautiful, and it's how it's supposed to be. And it's wonderful that we don't all look the same, but yeah, it's so hard not to compare yourself and not to look at other people. And it's just, it is difficult to kind of go against that voice in your head that's telling you that. And especially, when so many people are afraid of showing that side of themselves, it can feel scary kind of showing that and showing that you are having a rough time. So I'm so glad you brought that up.
Yeah. Well, speaking of that, I mean, it's funny because you talked about the fact that when you started blogging, because so many people, there's a misconception with people that maybe have not started down a healthier path. People that have never worked out, people that are like, I went to the doctor, I've got to lose weight, and I hesitate to say they're on the outside of fitness, right? And they're looking at, I'm using air quotes over here, fitness people or healthy people. And they look at us like mutants and they think, I don't know about you. I've gotten emails like this or Facebook private messages where, my professional folks in the workplace will write to me and go, Kelly, I just, my doctor told me I've got to lose 60 pounds. I see with your egg whites, when I used to eat egg whites all the time, he's like, I just can't eat that stuff. I can't eat that stuff you guys eat. And they actually talk about like fitness or healthy people as if we're mutants, like from another planet. And one of the things I'm very passionate about on this show, but just in general, is like, okay, here's a deal breaker, everybody. Most people I know enjoy working out, and a lot of people start because they like to eat, and we like to eat a lot. Yes, there are eating disorders on both sides. I'm not going to lie. And that's another topic that we'll be addressing, because we want to make it comfortable to talk about and deal with. But food is fuel. Food is a big part. And we very rarely, I kind of like that it's not very common to hear people go, I'm going on a diet. People talk about more, hey, here's what I eat. This is my lifestyle. So, I love in your bio on your blog and this is why when I wrote to you preparing for this podcast, I'm like, girl, you're my kind of girl, because you like cheeseburgers and pizza, and you have like this picture of you with this big Oreo cookie. I think it's not an Oreo. It's like it has M&Ms in it, right? The cookie?
Oh, the cookie. Yeah. Yep.
And so it sounds like you have, spit it out, Kelly. It sounds like you have a very balanced approach to eating. I think also in the same note, you know, in that bio, you said, you know, I love cheeseburgers, I love eating, and I'm going to let you explain. But you also talk about, you mentioned this earlier, it's about the long picture. And so you also pay attention now to the quality of your food. So what do you say to people? And how was this a process for you? Did you start off maybe more in a diet mindset? But what do you say to people that are just getting started that think, wow, if I'm going to get healthy, I can never eat food I enjoy. And it's all about dieting and deprivation. What do you say to those kinds of, as we say, myth understandings?
Yes. And I'm so glad you mentioned this because it's something I get emails maybe once a week, maybe not so much as not so often now, but I used to get them a lot where people would say, hi, Tina, I like you have a sweet tooth and I love my sweets, but I really like chocolate. And, you know, I'm really trying to eat healthy. So like, how do you cut it out? And I always respond back like, I don't. Because, I've never believed in that. And actually, I started working with a nutritionist at the beginning of this year. And she said to me, like, look, you need to change your diet. And I did change my diet. I added more fat. I added more protein. I did make changes. But I said to her from the start, I said, look, I am not giving up my sweets. I will eat well. I will eat good quality foods. I will put the fuel in my body that it needs to do the best it can. But I am not budging on I am having something sweet every day because to me, I enjoy that. And it's not just the joy of the, you know, moment on the lips, my lifetime on the hips thing, not, you know, for a split second, but it genuinely makes me happy. And it's something that I like. And I don't want to be that person that goes to a restaurant with some friends and, you know, you sit down and they say, oh, let's just order, you know, a pizza for the table. And you're like, oh, well, I can't really eat that. So I'm just going to get a salad and you guys eat your pizza. Like, A, that makes them feel horrible and makes them feel bad about themselves. But B, now they kind of almost have like a thing against you, like, oh, why are we, right. Why did we invite her? So I never wanted to be that person. So if I'm going to go out with, for the most part, if I'm eating at home, if I'm with my husband and we're, you know, cooking things ourselves, it's going to be healthy. Most of my meals are healthy, but I do have a sweet every single day. Maybe not like a giant cookie blondie brownie thing that I used to have every day, but I'll have that once to twice a week. And then the other days I'll just have maybe, you know, a handful of M&Ms or right now we're going through the Halloween candy. So it might be like two or three of the like mini size, Twix or something. And then when I go out to eat, that's when I kind of say, you know what, I'm going to get what I want because life is for living. And yeah, the quality of your food is important. But at the same time, do you really want to, you know, ruin experiences and miss out on, you know, relationships with friends and good moments and memories just because you are afraid of, you know, eating something that, you know, isn't perfect. And especially, you know, in this world where people get too obsessed with like clean eating, it feels you just end up missing out and you feel like this kind of just sadness because you're restricting yourself. And I don't know about you, Kelly, but I find when I do that, I tend to overeat on other things because I'm almost trying to fill a void. Like you.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, I think about the years that, you know, and not to, I don't want to mention any names, but like there's certain diets out there that encourage you, let's say 5 or 10 years ago, this diet, and I'm using air quotes around diet, was very popular. And you'd hear people saying, I'm going on this blah, blah, blah diet, and I'm allowed to eat all the cheeseburgers I want. I just take the bread off. And that's what you would hear people talking about is they'd say, this is so awesome. I've found a way that can help me get healthier by gorging myself. Like I don't really have to, you know, restrict or whatever. I can, and then I can have this and I can have all this mayonnaise. And it's like, I don't think you're really grasping that what you're looking for is something that lets you gorge and you don't want to do anything that requires any discipline. So there's several, I guess, layers to everything we're talking about here. I mean, number one, what I think you pointed out is you talked about, I have something every day. And for you, that might mean, you know, a handful of this or these, you know, that you mentioned the bite-sized candies. And I'm always thinking when I'm interviewing people and when I share my stories of what a newbie listener might be thinking, or what, you know, what I used to think when I was that newbie, and I'd hear certain interviews. So I'm going to make a point. I'm tying this down in a second, Tina, just bear with me. But you talked about that, and then, you know, going out and enjoying stuff with your friends. Just know, for those of you that are listening too, anybody, regardless of what you do, Tina is, and what I'm just going to say, in my opinion, you're an advanced runner. You run marathons. You're very experienced. It doesn't mean you, in order to enjoy sweets, you have to be an advanced Yes. runner or an advanced CrossFitter or a bikini competitor to enjoy sweets. Every single one of us has our own individual DNA, and it does require, I'm sure you'd agree, Tina, some degree and some time of like figuring your body out. You know, you figure out, like for me, there's certain sweets I can still have, thank God. You know, like on a normal day, I kind of have a air quotes paleo approach to eating. But guess what? I can still go to Olive Garden and have, and yeah, I'm an Olive Garden fan. I'm just going to put that out there. So like breadsticks and Alfredo, that doesn't upset my stomach, but there's some foods that I've figured out by trial and error. If I have cake, it just gives me a stomach ache, so I avoid it. But every one of us can figure out what sweets and treats we can have and how much. It doesn't mean, you know, I don't want anybody who's new thinking, oh, well, that's great. She can eat sweets every day because she's a marathon runner, or that's great. That guy can do that because, you know, he's a power lifter. Each person, you know, give it time to figure out what you individually can handle. And, you know, again, that goes back to what you said earlier, Tina, with I focus on the long term. I think people need to do that more. I've been guilty of wanting to lose X amount of pounds in 30 days and only focusing on the vanity size of fitness. And I think more and more people are understanding you gotta make this a lifestyle. I think you mentioned that in the beginning, like this is my lifestyle and I wanna be living it. Do you find that more people or some people that write to you on your blog that are just getting started are not really looking at it as a lifestyle? They're looking at, oh, I've got to go on a diet and punish myself. Or is that something you don't see as much?
I mean, I do see people that say about, you know, like exactly what you said about, well, it's okay for you, you're running, you know, 90 miles a week, but it's just more like a percentage thing. So for me, when I have those, you know, treats, I might be able to get away with a higher, you know, number of calories overall that are, you know, sweets or whatever. But maybe, you know, for me, I might have three of the bite size, you know, Twixes or Reese's or whatever they are. But for you know, someone else who isn't maybe burning as many calories, they only have one. Or you can just, you know, I might have, after a long run, I might have five slices of pizza, whereas, you know, you might only have one or two. So it's just about proportions. But yeah, I mean, I do get people who want to lose weight, a lot of people, but I think for the most part, I've kind of developed a following, a readership, I guess, of people who, you know, are kind of with me, and they might need some encouragement. But like, I have thrown away my scale. Well, actually, I haven't thrown it away. My husband has hidden it. So I have no way of seeing it. But I've just found, and I've encouraged people reading, that, you know, the scale is just so toxic. And it just, like, I don't know about you, Kelly, but I find that when I would stand on it, it would just dictate my day. If it said a number I wanted, then I would feel good about myself. But then I would almost eat more than I was actually hungry for, because I was like, well, I can play with a bit more today. I can get away with it. But if it was higher, then I would let it kind of dictate my day, and I would feel bad and be snappy and irritable with other people. So I've kind of tried to teach people that it's really not about that number, and it's more about helping your body to do what it can do and looking at your body and what it's done for you. You know, if you're a new person to the fitness world, okay, well, when I first started, I couldn't exercise for more than 6 minutes without stopping. But now I can do 15. So look at how far my body has come. So kind of looking at what it's done for you rather than looking at a specific number or a specific, you know, I want to be at this weight.
Amen to that. And that's a whole, that also is a whole other topic that we should address, the scale. So, and we will, because I used to be that person and I was weighing myself every day, picking myself apart every day. And it's just very destructive. So we will have you back on the show and we'll talk about that. And it's funny because I'm realizing as we're heading to the end of our time here, I said at the beginning of the show, we're going to talk about all things running. And we actually talked more about some of the other stuff. But I think that might be a good note to close this first interview with you on, in that you've got not only a blog where you share a lot about, you know, both body image and food and your struggles, your ups and downs, but running, but you also have a podcast about running. So maybe in closing, if you can just tell us about your podcast, what the title is, what you talk about, so that those that are listening that maybe are interested in just getting started or maybe taking things up a notch and starting down the marathon or the race path, what can they learn about on your podcast and what's the title and how can they find that?
Mm-hmm. Well, firstly, I think it's so interesting that there's so many, you know, people tend to put fitness world or like the CrossFit world or the running world into like buckets as if they're completely different things, but they're actually not. And a lot of the issues are the same thing, even if, you know, the media may portray them as completely different. So I found that really interesting with this, that we have the same kind of, we're coming from different approaches from different, you know, areas of fitness and wellness, but at the same time, we're finding a lot of the same parallels. So it's kind of cool.
Absolutely.
But yeah, so I am the community manager for runnersconnect.net, which is an online coaching community. And it's fantastic for anyone who is looking for running coaching, whether you're a new runner or an experienced runner, whatever level and speed you are, it's a great platform. But so part of my job is to host a running podcast, which the podcast is called Run to the Top. And yes, by runnersconnect.net. And I interview all kinds of people. I mean, I have scientists on there. I have psychologists on there. I have, you know, I've had people like Chris McDougall, who wrote Born to Run. I've had, you know, people who have done research, ultra runners, all kind, basically anything and everything in the running world. But also, you know, I've looked at like long-term health and wellness, and a lot of the people are actually just what quote-unquote everyday runners who have kind of these people that have just done these extraordinary things. Like, you know, I had a guy on a few weeks ago who overcame a 16-year battle with heroin through running, and he recently just ran across the US for his 60th birthday. So just people that are inspiring and can kind of show people that, you know, you don't have to be a professional runner to do something amazing. Like, everyone has it in them to do something special. So, yeah, it's comes out every Wednesday, and Run to the Top is the name.
That's awesome. I definitely think everybody that is listening to this, first of all, back to what you first said, yeah, I think it's pretty cool that here you are. I'm calling you this with air quotes. You're like a hardcore runner. I'm that runner that's like, yeah, I'm going to go out for 20 minutes and that's cool with me, you know? And I'm cool with it. I used to think that was bad and I had to apologize for it, but no, I've found my own style, what I love, but yeah, we both have a different approach to our fitness or our health and wellness, but we have so much in common. And really, that's why I founded Fitfluential, is I'm like, we need to stop segregating. You know, it's not because fitness isn't linear. Our health journey isn't linear. We all make friends and that's how we start trying new things. You know, it's cool that you see more hardcore bodybuilders and CrossFitters doing yoga now. And you see more yoga folks not going, well, hey, maybe I'm not going to be strictly vegan. Maybe I'll do this. And I know you feature on your blog Meatless Mondays, even though I believe you're not a vegetarian, which I think is cool. So open your mind. This has been a real pleasure. I'm talking to you, Tina. I think you bring so much depth and an amazing perspective to running, to food, to body image, lifestyle. So I encourage everybody, check out her blog, check out her podcast. Tina, thank you so much. And we hope to have you back. And everybody, I hope you enjoyed this episode today.
Thank you so much, Kelly. I absolutely loved it and yeah, would love to.
Thank you for listening to the latest episode of Fitfluential Radio. We hope you enjoyed the episode. Please visit us on iTunes and like this episode and subscribe to the podcast.
We want this to be your podcast, so please head on over to iTunes, write a review, give us your feedback, tell us what you want to see, give us your ideas, and even guest suggestions. For a full transcript of all episodes and bonus giveaways, be sure to visit fitfluentialradio.com. We look forward to seeing you again for the next episode of Fit Fluential Radio. Peace.
Please remember our disclaimer for the podcast. The materials and content discussed within the podcast are the opinions of hosts Kevin Cottrell and Kelly Alexa and are the guests interviewed. This information is intended as general information only for listeners of the podcast. Listeners should always seek professional advice, and the content and opinions expressed on the podcast should never be construed as a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment.